There is nothing surprising about this. Does not Christ himself pray in the man or woman who is engaged in mental prayer? And Jesus declared, "Seven, solemnly assure you, you shall see the sky opened and the angels of God ascending and descending on the Son of Man." Gen. 51:62. The presence of Mary. If we want to understand Mary's place in our life of prayer, we must begin by reflecting on her own prayer. It would be presumptuous to infringe on the communion of love between our infinitely perfect God and the most pure Virgin Mary. It is an inviolable Holy of Holies. At best, we can stand on the threshold, adore, and remain silent. But it is permissible, without violating the mystery, to seek to glimpse a few aspects of the prayer of the holiest of all God's creatures. Above all, we are not to think of Mary's prayer as a reality remote from us in time and space. There is nothing more relevant within our grasp. Let us slip into her prayer, the way one slips into the shadows of a chapel. In the presence of the Most High Majesty, she, the lowly daughter of man, adores. She sings a pure hymn of praise to the one who deigns to bend down over her lowliness, to do great things in her and through her. Mary prays for, or rather in the name of, her innumerable children, an excellent way of praying for those we love. How many of these children forget their God? They fail to thank him for his lavish gifts, and do not beg his forgiveness or acknowledge his sovereignty. But fortunately, their mother is there. What they neglect to do, she does in their place. She intervenes for each one of us individually before her Son, offering the stammering prayer of one, the groping good intentions of another. She intercedes for all, for those who are suffering, for those threatened by temptation, for those who refuse to give themselves to God, and for those who are facing death. Mary prays the way mothers do. I mean that she carries her children to her God, and offers them the way she once offered the infant she held in her arms. Do you see how I am answering your question on Mary's place in the prayer of Catholics? I will first speak to you of the place we hold in Mary's prayer. The reason is that our best prayer is the one the Virgin Mary offers in our name and on our behalf. The Christian who wants to pray begins by kneeling close to his praying mother. After he has been drawn into her recollection, he enters the company of his God through mental prayer. Then it is Mary's turn to become present to his prayer. If there is anything on earth that touches her motherly heart, it is the sight of one of her children trying to speak to the Lord and listen to him. Just as we shield a fragile flame from the wind with both hands, so Mary, with her all-powerful prayer, protects the mental prayer of her child. 63. The presence of Mary continued. Today, it is not I but a little boy named Bruno who will talk to you about mental prayer. It is a joy for me to send you a copy of the letter his mother sent me. Dear Father, in the K here for the month of August you wrote, the Christian who wants to pray begins by kneeling close to Mary in prayer. This text would probably not have made such a great impression on me, had my reading not coincided with a family episode that I want to tell you about. Our four children had just spent a long evening with their cousins at our old summer cottage. It was very late, 10:30, and they were all getting sleepy. As I put them to bed, I told them, "Just for this evening, sit on your beds for your night prayers." I sat down myself, at the foot of one of the beds. I began the night prayer, and as I slowly recited the Lord's Prayer, I became deeply recollected. In fact, I didn't notice at first that the youngest, Bruno, was touched by it and got up. He came and knelt on the bed, leaning against me. He unfolded my hands, and slipped his hands into mine saying, "Jesus." I continued the prayer, deeply moved, and he knelt there motionless. The older children explained to me later on, "He kept looking at you real hard, and then all of a sudden he got up." As it happened, I chanced to read your text 10 minutes later. If I hadn't read it, I would simply have had a tender memory of this tiny tot's delighted discovery. But now that I have read it, my prayer in union with Mary has been greatly helped. 64. Atheism and Mental Prayer. Portion of a letter addressed to Father Caffarel by another French priest. 6 I bar 7 Ather, in the Catholic circles that I frequent, there has been much JL7 talk of atheism since the fathers of the Second Vatican Council considered the matter. It is as if, all of a sudden, people are becoming aware of this new and terrifying phenomenon. A short sentence by Bishop Danilica of Czechoslovakia, who came out of the concentration camps, caused quite a shock. One third of the world is under the domination of atheism, which does not deny that it wants to conquer the whole world. The reactions I note around me are no less varied than those of the fathers during the 136th General Congregation of Vatican A. Equally varied are the causes to which this agonizing phenomenon is attributed. However, I am surprised that there is almost never any mention of what, to my mind, is one of the principal causes of atheism, at least in our Western nations: silence about God. Catholics, both priests and lay persons, rarely speak about God. I am not alone in noticing this. There is a cruel saying that goes back more than 20 years: religion has had nothing to do with God for a very long time. In recent years, I have had the opportunity to study the results of questionnaires sent to the faithful, asking their reactions to the Sunday sermons. I came to the same conclusion. A novelist, I don't know whether or not he is a practicing Christian, has noted this bankruptcy. Here is a passage from one of his novels. "The truth is, that nobody talks about God anymore. Nobody. At all, and first of all the clergy in an age when material things reign supreme as never before. Don't we need prophets? People who speak in season and out of season about God, the creator and master of the world as well as of all of life. Ah. Bissus. How can Christians hope that the upsurge of atheism will be halted, and the reign of God established on earth, if they do not first make God known to the world? My dear father, have no fear. Your letter did not scandalize me. I have often made identical observations. Need I tell you that in retreats for priests, and I've made quite a few, I have not often heard anyone speak at length and in depth about God, his innermost life, and his perfections? But why do we talk so rarely about God? That is the important question. To my mind, there is no doubt as to the answer. People don't talk about God, because they don't know him. We don't know him in the sense that the scriptures give to the word know. For the man of the Bible, to know means to have the concrete experience of a being. To know someone is to enter into personal relations with him. The psalmist sang, 'Taste and see how good the Lord is,' Ps 34:9. He knew God. Later on, Saint John wrote, 'Eternal life begun on earth, is this, to know you, the only true God,' Jn 17:3. We know that for Saint John, such knowledge is communion. Only those who know God experientially speak well of him, whether it be the pastor talking to his flock, the mother talking to her children, or the professor of theology talking to his class. The words of those who know God in this way touch the innermost self of those they are addressing. This is the heart in the biblical sense, the center of the soul, as the mystics like to say. Their words have the power of awakening, stimulating and developing the sense of God in their audience. But now a second question arises. Why are there so few of these knowers of God, who can speak eloquently about him, and are impatient to make him known? I have no hesitation in answering, because the form of prayer is neglected, which the great doctors and spiritual writers have for centuries called contemplation. Objections are made to the use of this word. I admit it can be the source of ambiguity. In fact, God is not contemplated the way one contemplates a painting. Nothing comes between the contemplative and the God he contemplates. He finds this God within himself. He experiences, in the innermost depths of his soul, God's presence and love and light. But never mind the word. The fact is undeniable in its harsh reality, prayer is neglected and contemplation is discredited. Those who opt for a life of prayer are accused of deserting the cause of mankind, of ignoring the great and urgent apostolic tasks. So also are those who devote even a limited time to prayer. This is why some Trappists in recent years have felt twinges of conscience, and asked themselves whether they should not go to work in factories. How far we have come from the conviction of the great Christian doctors, Augustine, the Gregories, Thomas Aquinas, who courageously affirmed the primacy of contemplation. They championed contemplation as a state of life, but also and first of all as a penetrating and delightful knowledge of God. Over and over again, they wrote commentaries on Christ's words to Martha, "Martha, Martha, you are anxious and upset about many things, one thing only is required. Mary has chosen the better portion and she shall not be deprived of it." LK 10:41-42. Saint Augustine commented on these words in a short but famous sentence, "Martha turbabata, Maria epilabata." It's not easy to give its richness of meaning in translation. Martha busied herself, Mary enjoyed. One would have to be completely ignorant of the history of the church to dare claim that the contemplatives are ineffective persons. The detractors of the contemplative life would quickly change their minds if they read, attentively and in good faith, the lives of such saints as Bernard of Clairvaux, Catherine of Siena, Mary of the Incarnation, and so many others. Contemplation has always been the wellspring from which the boldest and most vigorous apostles of the church renewed their missionary zeal. God alone knows what his kingdom owes to so many hidden and unknown contemplatives. They don't all live in cloisters. Many laymen and women are more truly contemplative than many monks. My conviction stands firm. When contemplative life declines in the church, error in diverse forms develops. The outstanding example is the militant atheism of our epoch, which one of the fathers of Vatican Council I described as the most serious error, the mortal illness of our time. This tidal wave, which threatens to submerge the whole earth, will be repulsed only if the church first makes an immense effort to nurture the contemplative life again in every milieu. Then there will be no more lamenting over the lack of apostles, and the prophets of the living God will multiply. 65. Black Mimona. So your young lions spend their time quarreling. And you, their mother, grieve over it, and tell me things are getting worse all the time. I must say, however, that I found your four boys very likable. Is it a matter of educational method? I am less sure of this than you. Far be it from me to counsel you against studying books concerned with education. I do fear, though, that you may lose a great deal of time pursuing miracle pedagogy. You remind me of the physician who unsuccessfully tries one cure after another, because he has misdiagnosed his patient's condition. Before searching for means of improving the situation, shouldn't you ask yourself what its true causes are? Will you allow me to advance the hypothesis that at least one of these causes lies within yourself? A story taken from the golden legends of the Muslim saints will explain this to you more clearly than some long dissertation. Abu Wahid ibn Zd wanted to know who would be his neighbor in heaven, and the following answer was given him, "O Abu Wahid, your neighbor will be Black Mimona." "And where is this Black Mimona?" he asked, with more boldness than discretion. "She is with the Banu so-and-so family, at Kufa." So Abu Wahid went to Kufa, and began to search for Mimona. He was told that she was a crazy woman who tended sheep over by the cemetery. He found her at prayer. The flock was grazing untended, and this was all the more extraordinary, because there were wolves intermingled with the sheep.